Leviticus 25, verse number 10 says, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." Hello, this is Pastor Wynn Greer from the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina, and you're listening to the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. We always take just a moment and want to invite you to come out and visit with us at the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. If you are visiting in the area, or if you're in the area and you're looking for a church home, we have our Sunday morning worship service every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Our Sunday morning, that's Sunday school, and then 11 a.m. is our preaching service. And then every second and fourth Sunday night at 6 p.m., we have our Sunday evening services. And then every Wednesday night at 7 p.m., we have our midweek prayer and Bible study. And we're currently studying in the book of Judges, which I'm very much enjoying. I've never preached through the book of Judges or looked at all the different judges. You know, we're looking at Gideon and Samson and Othniel and Ehud and a lot of these maybe that you've never even heard of, but we're enjoying that. And so lots of opportunities to come out and be with us. We have our church website, which has radio archives. It has sermons. It has more information about the church. You can look that up at mountlebanonbc.org, and it's spelled mtlebanonbc.org. It's good to have Noah in the studio today, and we appreciate him and all his help that he helps us with on the radio broadcast. How are you today, Noah?
I'm doing well, and I am glad to be here this morning. We do want to say welcome to all those listening in, those who listen in right here on AM 1450, WATA, and 96.5 FM right here out of Boone, North Carolina. Those who listen in on AM 690, WZAP out of Bristol, Virginia, and our listeners on 89.1 FM, The Truth, out of Watertown, South Dakota.
We do appreciate all of our listeners, and some good news about 89.1 FM, The Truth. I just received a letter from Brother Lamar Whittemore, and he's the pastor there at Harvest Baptist Church, and they have been praying about and trying to get a power increase for their radio station for some time now, and they were able to get that, so we're thankful for that, and that's good news, and congratulations to them. I know that was in answer to much prayer. And the Bible says in Jeremiah 33:3, it says, "Call unto me, and I will answer thee, and show thee great and mighty things which thou knowest not." So they had a power increase on the radio station, which means they'll go out farther with their outreach, which means we would expect also to have more listeners now. So if you are listening in for the first time, we welcome you to the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. Now, we have been looking at the subject of education, and today this is part number 14. 14 weeks now we've been looking at the subject of education in America, and of course the Bible does have a great deal to say about education along the lines that it is a parent's responsibility to train up a child. Proverbs 22 and verse number 6, the Bible says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." And then over in the book of Deuteronomy, God told the children of Israel to teach the law to their children, that they would have this in their house day and night. They would meditate upon these things. And so very, very important. Education, and another word for that would be discipline, training to bring up and to teach. And we looked, first of all, we started in early American education, the colonial time period. Actually, we started before that. We started actually with the Pilgrims, came up through the colonial time period. We've moved on now to talking about foundations in modern education. And we've said this many, many times, colonial education in America in colonial times was home-controlled, God-centered, and there was a high rate of literacy, which means that people could read. We talked about our key figure during that time period was a gentleman named Noah Webster, and that is Webster after Webster's Dictionary. That's the Webster we're talking about, and he is referred to as the father of American education and scholarship. Now, modern education is different. Modern education is state-controlled, which means, what do we mean by saying that? We mean that it is controlled by the federal government. And that is how education is in America today and has been for a long, long time. I do realize we have private schools, we have public schools, but the majority of children in America, I don't think anybody would argue that fact, are educated in the public sector, which is controlled by the federal government. And so we say modern education is state controlled. And even in private and homeschool, you have state controls on those options of educating a child. Modern education, instead of being God-centered, is man-centered. Now, man-centered, when we say that, we're talking about humanism, the introduction of humanism. And we've said a great deal about that in the past 2 or 3 weeks. Humanism is nothing new. And actually, let me say this, humanism is a religion. It's not a religion that says, you know, we worship God and we follow the Bible, but it is a religion. It is a religion of man worshiping man and the works of his own hands. And it's been around a long, long time. In fact, the children of Israel in the Old Testament, in the book of Isaiah, one example, the Bible says over there, their land also is full of idols. They worship the work of their own hands, that which their own fingers have made. And so the children of Israel had replaced the worship of the true God with the worship of the work of their own hands, what their own fingers had made. That is humanism. Humanism is a religion. And I know you hear about in schools today the separation of church and state, and you cannot introduce, religion or teach religion, but humanism is a religion. It's a religion where people worship the work of their own hands. And school today, modern education, is man-centered. And we've also said about modern education that there is a high rate of illiteracy, which means that students cannot read. Now, I'm not saying that all students cannot read, but certainly not in comparison to how it used to be. And we're going to give some examples of that from history. Our key figure when we were studying modern education, we've been centering around a man named John Dewey. John Dewey, he is called the father of progressive education. He was a progressive, and, we hear that in the political realm now. People talk about being a progressive. Hillary Clinton came out one time, and she said, I'm not a liberal, I'm a progressive. And so the progressive movement has been around a long time, over 100 years now. John Dewey was a humanist as well. He signed the first humanist manifesto, which was put out in 1933, and I think now they're on the third or fourth one, and it changes every time just a little bit. I'm aware that I've gone over this same thing several times now. In fact, just about every week I'm reiterating things that I've gone over before, and it's not that I don't know that I'm doing that. The reason that I do that is that's the fourth R. You know, we've talked about education and the three R's. Well, that's sort of a play on writing or words, reading, writing, and arithmetic. But in education, there's a fourth R, and it's an old word. It's the word rote, R-O-T-E. And we learn by rote. We learn by repeating things. That's why you don't go over your multiplication tables one time. You go over them many, many, many times. You learn to sing by rote. Children, little children, learn to speak. They learn to talk by rote. Rote means this, to fix in the memory by means of frequent repetition. And that's how we learn. We learn by hearing many times the same thing over and over again. Now, education in the 1700s, if we could go back and just take a picture, and then we could take a picture in the 1900s, historically, is going to look very, very different one from the other. If you went to the mid-1700s and then come forward 200 years to the mid-1900s, 1950s, they're going to look a whole lot different from each other in the same country. Private education in the 1700s will have been replaced by public education in the 1900s. Religious instruction in the 1700s was common. It was a part of the curriculum. It was a basic part of learning in the 1900s. Religious instruction, if you weren't in a private school, you'd just about be forbidden. Morality on the way out. Discipline on the way out. Discipline today in our schools would look nothing like discipline in the 1700s, or for that fact, the 18 or even the early 1900s, and even when I was in school. Very, very different today. Last week, we talked about the transitional time period of the 1800s. And during the 1800s, we had the introduction of a lot of new things, different things in our country. Well, in the 1800s, our country is still a very young country. New religions. We talked about that. You have non-religions popping up all over the place. You had the new Bibles begin to come out. This changes the way people think about things and look at things. You have new ideologies. You have the introduction of humanism, communism, which is the extreme end of socialism. But you had this introduced into our country and into our educational system. You have the rise of spiritualism, evolution, psychology, psychoanalysis, all of these things. And we could take a lot of time and spend weeks, really, on each of these. But all of these new things that begin to come along in the 1800s, they affected the spiritual life, the moral life, the civil or the patriotic life of America, the emotional areas of life. These are major things that we're talking about that came along and begin to change education in the 1800s. But what I really want to look at today and talk about today, something else happened in the 1800s that drastically changed the educational landscape in America. That thing that I'm talking about was the introduction of compulsory education. In America, in 1852, we have the advent of compulsory education. We have the first laws and legislation that is passed concerning compulsory education. Well, you might say today, what in the world is compulsory education? Well, that's a good question. Compulsory education is just a nice way to say that if your children are not sent to school, you're breaking the law. And so when we're talking about compulsory education, compulsory being compelled, being made to do something, whether you want to or whether you don't want to. And so we have the introduction for the first time in America of compulsory education in 1818. And we spent a lot of time talking about Noah Webster. Noah Webster was a key figure. He's a father of modern scholarship and education. Noah Webster, Webster's Dictionary, the Blueback Speller, is probably the most famous. He had a dictionary, spellers, reading books, readers, all of these things. But in 1818, Noah Webster estimated that over 5 million copies of his famous Blueback Speller had been sold in America. At that time in America, the population was less than 20 million people. And so if he had sold 5 million copies of his Blueback Speller in a nation that had less than 20 million people, well, I know you can do basic arithmetic. That means that 1 in 4 people in America had access or would have had a Blueback Speller. 1 in 4 people in the country. Each of those spelling books was purchased by a private individual. It was purchased privately. Somebody took hard-earned money and decided that they needed a spelling book in their home or in their school or for their child, and they went out privately now and they bought this book and brought it home. And when I talked about the Blueback Speller before, we talked about how that these books, you know, they didn't live in a throwaway society like we do. They were used in large families by a large number of children. They were passed on. They were shared. They were taken to the one-room schoolhouse. And so these books probably got a lot more use than a lot of our books that are put out today. But each spelling book was purchased privately. Somebody decided, I need to buy a spelling book. They paid out of their own pocket for it. You didn't just go to school and get free books. They didn't have the, when I was a little boy, they had the library, the mobile library go around sometimes, and you could go on and get a book, but they didn't have anything like that. So to have a spelling book was a privilege, but 5 million in a country of, in a population of 20 million, that's pretty good saturation point. That's 25% of the population. And a lot of them are adults and already know how to read. The American Library Association says this, that only one adult American in 11 will buy a book today. And that is an old statistic. That is from 1999. So I would say with the advent of the internet, Kindle books and all things like that, there's probably less than that today. In fact, I do believe you could just look around and see that there's not as many bookstores as there used to be. Once upon a time, you could go several places in our small town and we had several local bookstores. Well, the internet probably has killed our local bookstores. When's the last time you saw somebody reading a book? Carrying a book. I mean, it's just not something that you see all the time. I know Amazon.com is probably one of the biggest corporations in our country, but they are not selling primarily books. They are selling all kinds of other things. But we've said that in colonial America, there was a high literacy rate. I've mentioned this gentleman before, Alex de Tocqueville. And he was a Frenchman. He visited America. He wrote about visiting America and what he found. He came over here to find out basically what made America great. He visited from 1831 to 1832. He said this about what he observed about education in America. He said he knew of no people who have established schools so numerous and effective as Americans. And so when he looked around in America, he saw that he was amazed at the number of schools. And this is in a young country. America at that time and even previous to that was more literate than her European counterparts, meaning there was more people in America that could read than could read in Europe. But a lot of people have this misconception in their minds that, oh, Europe was this great place of learning, but more people could read in America than could read at that time in Europe. Pierre DuPont, and you've saw the company DuPont. And when I think about DuPont now, I think about they make paints and lacquers and all kinds of things. They started as a gunpowder. They made gunpowder. But the DuPont family is very well known in America. They've managed General Motors, some of them for years. And so the DuPont family, Pierre DuPont, at that time observed in 1812, and he was a businessman, philanthropist, and of course, member of the DuPont family. He said this about education in America. He said that fewer than 4 of every 1,000 people in the new nation could not read and do numbers well. Well, that's a pretty good statistic. Fewer than 4 people in 1,000 could not read and do numbers well. America, early on, had a high rate of literacy. Now, we fast forward to today, and on the other side of the coin, we might say, John Taylor Gatto. John Taylor Gatto, he was an American educator. He taught in public schools for over 30 years. Then when he retired, he wrote several books about education in America. John Gatto was named the New York City Teacher of the Year in 1989, 1990, and 1991, and he was named the New York State Teacher of the Year in 1991. And so this modern teacher who made his living in the public school system, after he retired out of that, here is what he said about education in America. He said that it was a very great mystery how a perfectly literate country before the advent of government schooling in 1852 was supplanted by a less literate one after decades of government schooling. And so he has observed that America was more literate before the introduction of government schooling and less literate, less educated after decades of government schooling. And we all know how, politicians, every election cycle, every time they come around, what is their big, key point? They've got these bullet points. They've always got to talk about education. We need more money for education. We need more teachers, and we need this, and we need that. But we're actually less educated. We spend more money than we've ever spent before on each individual student, but we're getting a far inferior product. It's insanity to keep doing the same thing and keep having a bad result, and you don't step back and look at it and say, hey, something's happened here. But that's exactly what we do in America, especially when the government is in control of or involved in something. I've got a book in my library, and it's called Dependent on D.C. It's by a lady named Charlotte Twight, and she has a chapter in there on public education. She gives all kinds of studies. It's one of those books that there's so much factual information that you just get overwhelmed. I mean, one study after another, after another, after another. I'm not going to read and go through all of those things that she gives to back up this statement, but here's what she said. One statement about public education in America. She said, today, scholarly studies, government analysis, and the popular press all report similar facts. American students cannot read, write, do mathematics, or think as well as their peers in other countries. As she goes on, talks about that there's been a general decline in education in this country, observed beginning in the 1960s. Well, there's something else that began to decline in the 1960s. We have prayer out of school. We have the Ten Commandments out of school. We're getting the, here's an easy way to put it. The farther we get away from God, the farther we get away from true knowledge and education. And so this has been observed, and it's been noted over and over and over again. Modern education is compulsory education. Beginning in 1852, since the year 1852, education in America has been the law. And from that time, we see that the government hand, and here's a word that they use to describe how government does things. Incrementalism. Little by little by little. Gain more power, more power, more control, until, like today, they have control of the whole thing. Well, a lot of people would argue up and down, well, that's good, that's good, that's good. But is the product coming out as good as it ought to be, considering the investment that is put into all the programs and all the different things that hold up the structure of education in America? Modern education is totally different from colonial education. Once upon a time in America, there was a time period when the primary place of learning was the home or the one-room schoolhouse. And today, the home would be a very small percentage, private schools under that, but the majority of children are educated in a public, state-controlled educational setting. So modern education is compulsory in that it is state-controlled, it is man-centered, and there are high rates of illiteracy. And I wonder sometimes when I hear about some of the things that goes on in the school, and we'll talk a little bit more about this as time goes on, but instead of where once upon a time the three R's were emphasized, reading, writing, and arithmetic, and then we also talked about that there was an emphasis morality and spiritual lessons that talked about God, general accepted truths about God and His Word. The Ten Commandments would have been introduced, would have been on the wall in a lot of schools. Today, a lot of what goes on in educational circles has to do with how do you feel about that, the input of peers as opposed to a teacher. You know, what does the other 12-year-old children have to say about it? What do the other freshmen in high school have to say about it? And so we find this going away from facts and figures to going into a realm of feelings and indoctrination and making good, pliable citizens that'll work for the state and that'll make a good voting block later on. And we've talked about there's a difference between education and indoctrination. So next week we're going to look a little farther into that, and we're going to find out just how did this compulsory, there was a push in the early 1800s for, they said, a need for a universal education. And that is exactly what we have to do today, how did a universal public education come about? And they're called, and they've been called for some time now, and we're going to look into this. They're called factory schools. Factory schools. They're all on the same curriculum. They're all on the same same tests, same this, same that, and they're turning out something. But what are they turning out? Well, I'll tell you, the answer is still this. It's found in Proverbs chapter 22 and verse number 6. And Noah Webster, this was one of his verses that he used many, many times. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And I've looked at that many, many times. I've preached on it before. If you think about a train, how am I going to train up a child? Well, if you have a train, what you have, you've got to have the head locomotive. You've got to have the one that has the power. And you've got to have the one that supplies the pull. And the others get in line and follow along. And so if I'm going to train up a child, I as the father, I've got to go first. I've got to lay the track. I've got to get my family on the right path. And so father and mother and children come along. And that's how you train up a child. Well, our time is quickly coming on today. I do appreciate you listening in. We are going to let Noah, he's going to come give the contact information in just a moment. But we appreciate you listening. We desire your prayers. Hope you'll tune in this same time next week. Good day, and God bless.
You've been listening to Blessings of Liberty, brought to you by Pastor Wayne Greer, the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. It's located in Vilas, North Carolina. If you'd like to contact us, you can reach us through our church phone number at 828-963-4596. That's 828-963-4596. Or you can reach us through our church website at mountlebanonbc.org. That's mtlebanonbc.org.